And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Morrow Midday Show. There we go. Welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday. With plenty to get to over the next couple of hours. Coming up, week one is huge for Clemson and the Carolina Panthers this year. And why I wouldn't want it any different. Plus, which quarterbacks would you break the bank for these days? Peyton Manning said something Sunday night that I think a lot of athletes should listen to. Also, the concerns for the teams of the NFC South. Can the Falcons be the latest to go from worst to first? And what does ESPN's FPI say about certain teams in the league? The Atlanta Braves trying to continue this run towards the top of the NL East. Looks like we have a new host for Jeopardy. Have some drama in the horse game as well. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 later on. And a whole lot more over the next few hours. With you till 3, you can join the conversation throughout. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email at studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online by visiting charlestonsportsradio.com. There you can click on our show page and find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. You can also leave a comment for the show. And you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, doing quite well. And it's Tuesday, but it's still going quite well. How about you?
Oh, happy to hear. Doing well. I hear today is Connecticut Day. So if this is true, this is my own special day. We'll have to celebrate me and my fellow nutmeggers all afternoon. You're welcome. Let me start with this. Week one of the football season for college football and the NFL just weeks away. In fact, the opening game of the NFL season was a month away from yesterday. And for Clemson, they have to begin with Georgia, September 4th, Saturday night. In fact, both of these games are in Charlotte. Charlotte is going to play a big role early on in defining the seasons for Clemson and the Carolina Panthers. Clemson opens up with Georgia, neutral site, at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, September 4th. And then, a week later, the Panthers open up at that same stadium against the New York Jets, Sam Darnold's former team. And for Clemson, we know that's a huge game. It's, in fact, the biggest game on their schedule in terms of opponent this year. You may say, oh, the Palmetto Bowl, because it's a rivalry, but they could actually lose the game against Georgia. They're not going to lose the game against South Carolina. They're not going to lose any of the games in the ACC. At least they shouldn't. None of their other non-conference games. Georgia's the toughest game on the schedule. It'll be the best team they face all year, up until the playoff at least. And if they lose that game, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season unfolds. It'll be dependent on what other teams do, but the ACC isn't strong enough to overcome losses out of conference. Now, Clemson is Clemson, and so it's not like the committee will leave them out just because of that one loss to Georgia. But it plays a big role for those two teams to set the tone, to start their season, to make that push towards the playoff. And right away, week one, neutral site, new quarterbacks, Georgia, Clemson, let's go. And one of those teams will have to begin with a loss. For the Carolina Panthers, they begin at home with the Jets as they break in their new quarterback, Sam Darnold. And he begins with his former team, the Jets, coming to his building September 12th. So talk about right, jumping right in. New team, there's some pressure on you. The Panthers are hopeful that all your issues were with the Jets. You got to get off to a good start, right? Like when you begin at a new company, you don't want to fumble on the first day. You want to get off to, you want to make a good first impression. You show up early, you're dressed nice, you're asking if you can help, you're volunteering, you're staying late, you're helping people, right? You're doing whatever you have to. You want to set a good first impression. You want to let them know you got the right guy for the job. That's what Sam Darnold wants to do. And he's going to be doing it against his former team. So it would be like if you start your first day at that company and whatever industry you're in, your direct competitor is the company that just got rid of you. Right? You're working, you just started at a car dealership, and across the street is the car dealership that just unloaded you last week. And you think, all right, I'm going to sell a bunch of cars today. They're going to see it from across the street. We're going to kill them this month in the sales, and it's going to be all because of me. Sam Darnold has a chance week one to not only make a good first impression with the Panthers, but to do it against the team that just got rid of him. We had David Newton on the show yesterday as part of our training camp check-ins, this time with the Carolina Panthers. And David said his largest concern with the Panthers this year is still the quarterback, and that all may hinge, the success or lack thereof of Darnold this year, may hinge on that week one game against the Jets.
It's still got to go back to the quarterback play. I mean, if Darnold is not consistent, I think we'll find out right away. They play the Jets, you know, his former team. If he comes out and lays an egg against them, then there are going to be some problems because that's got to play in his mind if that happens. He doesn't play well and they lose that game. But if he can come out and play well there, I think they need to get out to a fast start. But if he plays well early, he gives them a chance with all the other things I've mentioned between the defense and what they got with the weapons on offense. He gives them a chance to be a team that could be right on the edge of playing for a playoff spot this year.
David Newton on the show yesterday with us as our latest training camp check-in. You know, it's like a jump shooter, right? As he said, if Sam Darnold does not start well week one, it could start that boulder, that snowball downhill where things just don't get better all year. Mentally, that could be enough to just zap him out for the rest of the season. Like Yogi Berra said, baseball is 90% mental. He would then go on to say the other half is physical. But, right, sports, 90% mental. For Sam Darnold, you come out against your former team, starting with your new team. If you lay an egg, could be tough to rebound. You're thinking, this is going to be different. Right, it's like if you transfer colleges, you think, I got to get away from that. I did not like that one school. You transfer to another school, you show up the first day of college on a beautiful August day. It's a nice campus. You think, this is going to be different. Then you get, you know, shoved into a locker by somebody as you're walking down the hallway, and you think, okay, this is not going to be different. This is the same thing. You start having flashbacks. Sam Darnold, if he doesn't play well week one, it's like, oh, man, my new team just lost to my old team, didn't play well. I got to turn things around. I got to save my career. And it's like a jump shooter in basketball. A lot of jump shooters can be very mental. You make the first shot. You see that first shot go in. There'll be money for the rest of the game. They miss that first shot. That could be enough to take them out of it. I think it was either with the Citadel or maybe the previous team I worked with Stetson. But I remember one year in particular, the coaching staff crunched the numbers and actually found that they shot so much better when they made their first three. That as a team, they were so mentally focused, or even in a sense so mentally fragile, that as a team, when they made their first three-pointer, I actually think it was the Citadel a couple years ago, they crunched the numbers and saw it. In games when they made their first three, they shot, you know, like 45%. And when they missed their first three, they shot like 35%. Right? They did much worse from beyond the arc. Something as simple as that. When you see that first shot go in, you feel like, oh yeah, this is my day. You miss that first shot, you think, oh boy, and it starts to snowball. Then maybe you miss your second, and you think, oh, this is not going well. And then it becomes more of a mental thing. And you miss your third, and you can't recover. For Sam Darnold, you have a bad first game after a couple of down years in New York. You come to a new place, new start, new environment. Here's the former team. Remember, bringing back bad memories. It's like you go on your first date in a new relationship. You show up at the restaurant, and sitting at the table next to you is the girl that just dumped you last week. And you're thinking, man, I'm trying to start over and get away. And it ruins the whole first date, and you think, I'm cursed. I can't get away from this. And that'll be Sam Darnold losing to the Jets in week one. Now, the good news for him, good or bad, is that the Jets are not a good team. Defense may be better this year, but it's an opportunity for Darnold to play well. He can go out there. It's at home against a team he's familiar with, a team that's not very good, a rookie quarterback making his debut on the other side. If I'm Darnold, I welcome this opportunity. Much like if I'm Clemson, I welcome this opportunity week one against Georgia. Both teams dive right in. This is not Eastern Illinois coming to your building. You got to be ready to go. Start off with Georgia at a neutral site. Sam Darnold, with your new team, you start off with your old team coming to town. You better win and you better play well. Both teams with a lot of pressure to begin the season. They can't ease in. They're diving right in head first. And I would prefer it that way because you know where you stand, or at least will know where you stand a week in. You don't have to wait around and wonder, stress. Right, for Clemson, the big concern has been the defense against top-tier programs. Last three games, all on the road against big-time programs. Right, Ohio State, they gave up 49 points and lost. Notre Dame, 47 points and lost. LSU, 42 points and lost. All three games away from home. So here they begin the season, neutral site. Last time we saw that defense, they got torched by Justin Fields. Let's see how they can do against JT Daniels, who I believe is the best quarterback in the SEC. And Georgia with a lot of weapons on offense. And it's week one, which is the biggest toss-up. You're not in midseason form yet. Some guys are still getting their legs underneath them. You're still building the calluses. You got to take some hits first to get into that midseason form. Neutral site, yeah, it's Charlotte, so there'll be plenty of Clemson fans there. But still, it's not your own stadium. You had to travel. You stay in a hotel the night before. You know, it's a quasi-road game. And you go up against Georgia to start the year with a lot of new pieces coming in certain areas, at least offensively. For Clemson, it's a real test right away, but at least you know where you stand. You come out, you play well defensively, you think, okay, we'll be good. As opposed to if you start the season with South Carolina State, and then you play UConn, and you play the ACC, and you play even South Carolina at the end of the year, you think, okay, the defense was great. But how is it going to fare when we get to the playoff and have to deal with an Ohio State or an Oklahoma or an Alabama? See, I want to know right away. Let's jump right in. Find out against Georgia if this defense can match up against one of the best offenses in the country. And if it does, then as the season progresses, you don't have to sit there nervous or worried about, well, once we get to the playoff, will our defense be able to match up with some of these other teams? Because you have already seen it. Or the opposite will be Georgia goes off for over 40 points on you, and then that's your concern. And you can at least address it to the best of your ability throughout the season. You imagine a defense will get better as the year goes on. Right, you adjust, you make some changes, you fix your rotations, guys get coached up, and you know what you have to work on. If that's the case, by the time you get to the playoff, much like the Carolina Panthers, like David Newton said, it could all come down to that first game. So I want to know if I'm the Panthers. Don't get my hopes up. I want to know right away, is Sam Darnold the guy? If he comes out and he lays an egg, then week two you get the Saints, and right, and if he struggles again, you'll know early on, like, okay, this is not our guy. Let's start making plans for the future. We have to dip back into the quarterback market this offseason. What can we do? Let's position ourselves to get the right guy. Took a swing on Sam Darnold. It was a swing and a miss. Now how do we bounce back? I want to know that right away. Instead of you're in the middle of the pack, hovering along. He's doing okay, not great, not bad. And you're in November still trying to figure out, like, is he the guy? Is he not the guy? I want to know. I want a sure answer. Just like when you're in a relationship, a lot of people you've been in a relationship with, they probably asked you, like, what is the plan? Right, they want some sort of clarity for the future. You may think, like, oh, we're just going, we're figuring it out as we go. They don't like that. Right? Maybe a lot of women that you dated, they want to know, what are your plans for me? At your job, when your contract is coming up, you want to sit down and say, hey, do I need to start looking for a job elsewhere, or are we going to be able to negotiate? You want to keep me around, or what's going on here? Right? I want to know a little bit of my future ahead of time. And it's similar with Clemson. Like, we want to know what's ahead of us once we get to that playoff. For the Panthers, we want to know if Sam Darnold is the guy. No better way than to find out week one. You'll find out about those concerns. Clemson's defense against a top-tier offense. The Carolina Panthers' new quarterback. You'll find out right away. Is this the right guy? Do we have this answered? Or is this going to be a concern the rest of the season? Right now, I'm somebody that when I travel, I don't mind booking last minute. You're probably going to pay more. Sometimes you can find a real deal, but at least I'm not going to get suckered into something just because it's cheaper. I'm somebody that anybody that knows me, they'll get frustrated because I could be last minute in that sense. They want to make plans for next Saturday. Say, text me on Saturday, and then we'll figure out the plans. I have no idea. I don't want to commit to a dinner at 5 o'clock. I don't know what's going on next Saturday, right? Maybe I got going a little late that day. I didn't get to the gym as early as I want, or I got some errands to run or whatever. I got held up even at the pool. Like, I don't want to commit to something like that. Text me on Saturday, and we'll figure out what my day's like, and then I'll go. Same idea with the trip, right? I'll wait. I've booked flights for Christmas, 2 weeks in advance. Like, let me wait and see what I have going on so I don't get stuck to a certain flight. For example, I have I booked a flight for next month, and then now we're talking about fantasy football drafts. And I'm telling, I got a flight that night. I can't do the draft. We have to find another day. Now, fantasy football, as serious as I may take it, is not something serious enough for me to adjust my travel plans. But you get the idea. Once you book your flight, some of them are not easy to move. You're locked in. And you book it months in advance, and then you get closer to the flight, and you realize, like, oh, actually, it'd be better if we left earlier in the afternoon, or it'd be better if we left the next day. Oh, I wish I was still here for that, but I already booked my flight for that night. So I like to wait, get as much information as I can. But many like to travel, right, like to book their travel plans immediately, lock it in. They want to know, hey, I'm going to Aruba in December. This is the day I leave. I already got my flight. We're leaving at this time. Here's the hotel. Right? There's some people, most people probably, are not like me where you're more of a planner. This is that same idea. This is not waiting to the last minute. Acting like me and waiting to book your flight weeks in advance to see, you know, which day will be best for you to leave would be like Clemson opening up with South Carolina State and, we'll just figure it out when we get there. We don't know how good this defense truly is against top-tier teams. We'll find out when we arrive in the playoff. No, now this way, you get an answer right away. You're thinking, okay, I have that trip in December, and I already have my flight booked. I don't have to worry about that. I can cross that off my mental list of things to stress over. Already have my travel taken care of. I got the hotel. I got the flight. We're good to go. We don't have to worry about it. The trip is still 8 months away, but we are set for the travel. We don't have to worry about that. That would be Clemson and even the Panthers to a certain degree week one. You don't have to spend all year worrying, like, is Sam Darnold going to be able to come up big in a big moment for us? Is this Clemson defense going to be able to slow down a team in the most important game? We will find out week one right away. You'll have your answer. Like when you sign a contract and your boss tells you, yeah, you know what? This is the last contract we're going to sign you. It's like, okay, thanks for the heads up. Now I got 3 years to look around. Right now I got 3 years to do something about it. Clemson, you'll have all season to do something about it if you have to. The Panthers, you'll have all season to do something about it if you have to. Tough games to start the year, both in Charlotte for the Panthers and Clemson, but I wouldn't want it any other way. It goes against most of my thought process. Usually I want as much information as I can. Usually I want to make a decision as late as possible, but in this case, right, don't drag them around. Let's find out right away week one, do we have what it takes? If not, it allows us enough time to make an adjustment. That'll be the case for Clemson and the Panthers to start the season this year. Coming up, Josh Allen got that big contract. And now the talk shifts to who could be next. Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson. Should any of them truly get these big paydays? When we come back, the quarterbacks that are actually worth breaking the bank for. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, which quarterbacks would you be willing to break the bank for? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Josh Allen got his big deal over the weekend with the Bills. They broke the bank for him. Second highest paid quarterback, I believe, over the course of the contract. And really a better deal for him than what Patrick Mahomes got. Mahomes, it's going to take to his eighth year to start making the annual type of money that Josh Allen would. And I said yesterday on the show, right, in the case of Josh Allen, I'd like to see a little bit more. A lot of times teams will jump at this opportunity because when it comes to the quarterback position, it is a bit of like a never-ending cycle, right, that we hear you need a quarterback to win, but we also hear, but you don't want to pay that quarterback too much. You got to find that sweet spot. Get that quarterback just right. That's why they want the veteran quarterback who will take a, you know, team discount because they've made enough money. Or you want the quarterback that's still on the rookie contract that looks to be really good early in their career and you don't have to pay them too much just yet. But once you start paying that quarterback big money, it makes it very difficult. You have to know that the quarterback you get or you sign to that deal, they'll be able to win if they don't have a ton of talent around them. Right? Which quarterbacks can win a little bit more on their own? Which quarterbacks can put the team on their shoulders? Because those are the ones, maybe the only ones, you should be willing to truly break the bank for. if you believe your quarterback is one that needs some assistance, they need help, they need a good roster, it's not worth it. But again, it's a tough spot for these teams and these GMs because you hear so much, you need a quarterback. Then they get a quarterback, and they think, well, we can win with this guy. But then you can't cross that threshold of, okay, you have the quarterback, but you can't pay him too much. Right, like a Baker Mayfield. Now that Josh Allen has his contract, next in line are Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. And Baker is a good example. You know, where Baker seems good enough, he led them to the playoffs last year. But not good enough, he's not a Tom Brady, or I guess a better example would be a Patrick Mahomes or an Aaron Rodgers, where he can go out and win on his own when he doesn't have a ton of talent. The Browns have one of the best rosters in football, right? And they still can't, they're still not, in my mind, a Super Bowl team. So it's a fine line you walk where it's like, yeah, we do have a quarterback, but is he worth giving all this money? Or is it worth the gamble of letting him walk and trying to find another quarterback either in free agency or somehow a trade, not a lot of good quarterbacks get traded, or in the draft? Go back to the drawing board because quarterbacks are so hard to find. And teams are so desperate for quarterbacks. It's like right now, right? A lot of this is supply and demand. Right now, go to your local restaurant. How many of them have signs that are either saying they're hiring or, you know, we apologize for staffing issues, or the amount of restaurants of like the fast food variety or the quick, you know, you order at the counter type of restaurants that either have like the dining room closed or drive through only, or some that are takeout only because they're understaffed. And they are desperate for workers these days. So somebody could walk in there, they could be a terrible worker. But the company's like, yeah, we just need people. Right? The restaurant's saying, we just need somebody. We have no idea if you're actually going to be good or not, but we need you. It can be like that with quarterbacks a lot in the NFL, where it's like, well, Baker Mayfield, he's not the best quarterback, but it's a bit of a gamble if we pass on him and go back into the quarterback market. We need a quarterback. It's the most important position in sports. We have one here that's gotten us to the playoffs. So let's just bite the bullet and hope things work out. Right? You're desperate. You need that quarterback. You don't want to be playing Russian roulette, the quarterback position. Just like for these restaurants, like, you don't want to be turning people away. Like, I don't know if they'd be a great employee, but the alternative is not having an employee. So we might as well hire them and take a chance. I don't know if Baker is going to be that franchise quarterback, but the alternative is trying to go back to the well and finding someone better at the quarterback position. And we may, or if you're the Cleveland Browns, we may go another 20 years without a good enough quarterback. Right? Browns fans walking around with those jerseys of 30 quarterback names on the back of a uniform. That could be our future once again. Why don't we just settle down with this person? So I was thinking about it. For the quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Baker, they are next in line for the big contract. I wouldn't give either one a big contract. I would take my chances going back into the quarterback market if I'm the Ravens or the Browns. And I say this knowing that I would also be the same person to rip them apart if they fail to find another good quarterback. Right? Talking a little bit out of both sides of my mouth. I would not give Lamar that big payday, even though he's been an MVP and he's gotten you to the playoffs. But I would also be the same person. It's the pressure that are on these teams that if you move on from Lamar and you try to replace him with somebody else that doesn't work out, right, the amount of heat that you will take from the fan base and from the media, including myself, I'm understanding of the move, and yet if it doesn't work, I'm probably still going to criticize. So I figured let's categorize all the quarterbacks in the NFL, and I put them in, I got five different categories about a big long-term contract. And it's based off of if you think these quarterbacks are good enough to really shoulder the team, to win on their own. Or do they need more help? So I put them in five categories. I have the no doubt category. I wouldn't think about it twice. How much money do you need? Okay, we'll give it to you. There's no way we're letting you walk. Then I have the bite the bullet category, where these are quarterbacks that are, you know, maybe not there, but you could do a lot worse. Sure, you could do better, but you could also do a lot worse, so you might as well just bite the bullet and take your chances. Then I have the not yet category, where I have to see a little bit more. I'm not rushing to sign a contract with these quarterbacks. And if push comes to shove, I would let them walk. It's the not yet. Now, you can still give it another season. Let's see how this year goes, and maybe by the end of this year, you'll be pushed into the bite the bullet or no doubt category where I realize, yep, this is a guy, pay him what he wants, keep him around. Then my fourth category is definitely not. I already have an answer. Nope, not giving these guys some sort of long-term deal that I have to break the bank for. Not giving them millions of dollars. And the fifth category is years ago. Quarterbacks that years ago I would have given them a contract. But at this point in their career, it just wouldn't be worth it. So let's run through these five categories relatively quickly. The no doubt category. I think, fairly obvious. Tom Brady, even at this age, if he went to the Buccaneers after winning that Super Bowl, in fact, you can make a case that his leverage, right, would never be higher. If he came to the Buccaneers and said, I want more money, I'd say, sure, Tom, what do you need? I'm keeping him around. I don't care that he's 44, whatever he is. I don't care that he may only play another season or two. Whatever. Whatever you want. You just brought us a Super Bowl in your first year. People now are talking about the Buccaneers going 17-0 this year. Sure, Tom, whatever you need. I don't care how old you are. Aaron Rodgers is also in the no-doubt category. He's been doing it his whole career. Has he won the big game? No. But the only reason why the Packers continue to win divisions and get to the playoffs and NFC title games, because of Rodgers. They do not have the most talented rosters in football, but they have one of the most talented quarterbacks. He makes up that difference. I will give Rodgers whatever he wants, and even if I can't put enough talent around him, we've seen it over the course of his career. He can still win. I'm going to say the same for Patrick Mahomes. The Super Bowl did not look good, right? You take away his two starting tackles, and he looked below average. But Patrick Mahomes has that ability, the talent, that I believe, even with some lesser talent around him, he'll be just fine. Deshaun Watson I'd also put in the no-doubt category. Now, you could say he hasn't won enough in Houston. Right? He hasn't had a ton of talent around him, but he's still not winning, so would it be worth it to give him all that money and continue on this path hoping that things would change? But I just think Watson is such a talent, and again, this is excluding all of the things he's currently going through. Tell me that Deshaun Watson will play another 15 years in the league, I put him in the no-doubt category. If I don't have to worry about anything off the field with him, I would be willing to give him a big payday, put less talent around him, and hope that's enough to win. I think he does have enough ability in order to do that. And the other category, my no doubt, or I should say the other quarterback in my no doubt category, Russell Wilson. He's been doing that his entire career as well. The Seahawks have never been the most talented team, and yet he's never had a losing season. Category number two, bite the bullet. Guys that I don't think are there yet, but you could do a lot worse, so you might as well just bite the bullet and hope it works. That would be Matt Stafford, who the Rams just gave up quite a bit for to bring in, thinking he'd be that missing piece. We'll know more. I could easily put Stafford in the not yet category and give you a more clear answer a year from now. Let's see how it works with the Rams. The belief is that it was the Lions, like Sam Darnold, right? It was the Lions holding him back. But Stafford can never win the big games. We think it's because of a lack of talent. Well, he no longer has that excuse. And playing in the toughest division in football this year with the second-best Super Bowl odds in the NFC, if the Rams underperform, then I would take Stafford out of the bite the bullet and put him into definitely not. This is kind of his last stand. But as of today, if I was the Rams, I like that move by the Rams because I do think it will make all the difference for him and he will have a great season. If he doesn't, I then drop him down to the definitely not category. That if he shows even with this Rams team he still can't win big, then yeah, I'm not giving him big money. Josh Allen I would put in the bite the bullet category. I'd like to see more out of him than one season. But, again, push comes to shove. You tell me it's either you give him this contract or he's going to walk today. I'd say, all right, I'll bite the bullet because he has the potential to be a big-time star. We saw that this past year. And not only that, but the skill set. He's tall. He's fast. He's got a rocket for an arm. He improved his accuracy last year. And don't forget the Bills, they have a good defensive coach and a solid defense, but they didn't have much of a run game last year. And in the passing game, Cole Beasley is their number two wide receiver. That's why they went out and added Emmanuel Sanders this offseason. So Josh Allen put up an MVP season last year with a defensive head coach, not much of a running game, and really just Stephon Diggs. Right? And in terms of the offensive side of the football, he has a lot less help than Brady, than Patrick Mahomes, and he still performed really well. So I think there's a high ceiling still on Josh Allen, but I do want to see a little bit more to make sure that that is the real Josh Allen. I would also bite the bullet on Kyler Murray. I do think he has a high ceiling moving forward as well. I think he shows some of that big play potential. And just a dual threat guy. Strong arm, can run, makes plays with his arms and his legs. I would bite the bullet today on Kyler Murray. Keep my fingers crossed, hoping that it would work out. And the last quarterback would be Dak Prescott. Now, of course, the Cowboys bit the bullet, and I would do the same as well. Is he a great quarterback? No. Right? Does he need some help around him? Yes, but I do think there's enough playmaking ability. He's dynamic enough that I would take my chances. And again, the Cowboys, they had Tony Romo, now Dak, but prior to that, they know how tough it was to replace a Troy Aikman, so I wouldn't let Dak walk because I do think he's a top 12, maybe top 10 quarterback. That's good enough to keep around. Then the not yet category. I have to see more. Headlined by Baker and Lamar Jackson. As of today, I would not give him a long-term deal. Lamar Jackson, I don't believe, can win on his own. He can't throw the football well enough. He's been a disappointment in the playoffs. Baker Mayfield, similar idea. The Browns want him to do less. How can you invest big money in that guy? He can't carry the team. You want him to avoid carrying the team. Now, if they show me something this year, I'll change my mind. But as of now, I'm saying not yet. There's still some room to grow. But today, I would not give either of those two a contract. Not like Josh Allen. I would let them walk. Joe Burrow would be not yet. Have to see more than a season, but it was a very promising first year. Justin Herbert is, I struggled putting him in the not yet category because I'm that high on Justin Herbert. But let me see a second year, kind of like Josh Allen. If Herbert shows me this year he has another great season, I would sign him. I would not wait any longer and let that price go up. I would sign him to a contract. If I'm the Chargers, sign him to an extension after this season. He wouldn't be eligible, but I would try to if I could. Trevor Lawrence is another one not yet. I think he'll have a great career, but we have to see something in the NFL first. Daniel Jones is in my not yet category. Have to see something from him. I think he'll be much improved this year. He plays much better when Saquon Barkley is on the field. He gets him back healthy this season. I think Daniel Jones will have a good year. If not, then you move on. If he does, I'd be willing to give him that deal. Also in the not yet category, Justin Fields, who of course has to prove himself. Sam Darnold, who has to prove himself in Carolina. I think he has a good year. If he doesn't, you're certainly moving on. But he has plenty of talent around him now. No longer has the excuses of New York. Let's see what Darnold is made of. And lastly, Jameis Winston I put in the not yet category. If he, and this is a big if, you could say this about any struggling quarterback, but if he just removed the turnovers, he had 30 interceptions his last time as a starter. If he could just remove those, he could be a really talented quarterback. Will I think that happens? No, but he is working with Sean Payton. If Sean Payton can get more out of Jameis Winston, he does have some good abilities with the arm talent, the size, the athleticism, not a good decision maker. If you can adjust that, Jameis Winston could still be a guy to salvage and give quite the contract to. Then, the definitely not category, no chance am I giving these guys a long-term contract. Tua, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, young guys that need to prove themselves. Also, Tyrod Taylor, of course. Carson Wentz, no way. Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater, Jalen Hurts, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I would not commit long-term to. Derek Carr, I would not. I've seen enough from him in Las Vegas. I can have him be a starting quarterback, but I do not want to get committed to him for a long-term deal. Much like Jared Goff, sure, he could be serviceable for a year, but he's not my long-term answer. Neither is Andy Dalton, Taysom Hill, certainly. And then the last three, Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, Jimmy Garoppolo. These are three that can be debated. But I think I've seen enough from all three that, again, they'd be serviceable. I'd bring them in for a year or two, but you tell me that I have to pay them millions of dollars over the next 5 years, I think I'd rather punt. Right? On Kirk Cousins, who is good. I've always defended Kirk, but there are some better options out there. Same with Jimmy Garoppolo, and same with even Ryan Tannehill. As well as he has played in Tennessee, and the Titans did give him his big deal, I did not like that move. I could not bring myself to do the same. He's looked really good, but now he's lost his offensive coordinator. We'll see how he fares this year. I don't think it's worth the big money. And the last category, the years ago category. Only three quarterbacks here, where a few years ago I'd be willing to give that big contract, but no longer. And that's Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan. Pretty self-explanatory. Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger, I think, are over the hill. They're beat up, they're battered, they're not the same quarterbacks they once were. And Matt Ryan, while he still seems to have plenty left in the tank, he too is not quite the same quarterback he once was. He was never the greatest quarterback in the league, and now he's not the greatest quarterback in the league, and he's also in his late 30s. I'd be willing to take that chance more 5 years ago than certainly today. So those are the quarterbacks that years ago I'd give him a big contract. Ben Roethlisberger, of course, he's a Hall of Famer. Cam Newton, good enough playmaker, former MVP. And Matt Ryan, where did have that MVP season. If he was younger, I would take the chance or put him in the bite the bullet category. That's how I would categorize quarterbacks when it comes to contracts. Because now that Josh Allen has his deal, the big talk today is about Baker and Lamar and who's next and are they going to set the market and this and that. That's how, if I was a GM, I would look at it. If you're in my no doubt category, no doubt you're getting a new contract. If you're in the bite the bullet, okay, then when we get into a tough negotiation, I'll probably give in to you. I'll tell you that up front. The not yet category, you got to show me more. The definitely not category, I already know. Sorry, there's nothing you can do about it unless you go off and have a couple of good seasons, but I'm not giving you that deal. And then the years ago where I'd say, sorry, guys, right, you missed the boat. If this was 5 years ago, I'd give you that deal, but not today. That's how I would categorize the quarterbacks in the league currently. Coming up, Peyton Manning said something in his Hall of Fame speech on Sunday that I think really all athletes should hear. So I'll play it for you next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
on the Morrow Midday Show.
They're really rocking in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA. Deep in the heart of Texas and round the Frisco Bay. All over St. Louis and down in New Orleans. All the cats gonna dance with Sweet Little 16. Sweet Little 16.
She coming up, got to have Peyton Manning said something Sunday night in his Hall of Fame speech that I think should be heard by all athletes. And we'll get to that coming up here in just a moment on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. They just released the first coaches poll. USA Today Sports AFCA coaches poll. Since we've been on air. I'll have to take a look at that and give you any takeaways. Don't care about the preseason polls whatsoever. Don't care about preseason awards. It's so ridiculous and a waste of time.
Polls should not be kept until October.
Yeah,
that's what I've always
said. That's fair. Like the polls, I've always said, you know, it creates a bias heading into the season where we base everything off of these polls, just a handful of people's opinions. And if you start the season already in the top four, you're given the benefit of the doubt. It's on you to then prove why you don't belong in the playoff. And for every other team in the country, it's on them to prove why they do belong. So I don't like that idea either. That, why? Based off of what you and I sit around, if we had a vote in this? Now, coaches' poll is different. That's obviously the coaches, but they don't watch other teams. They only know about their conference and their opponents for that season. Trust me. And they're not watching the other team. They have no idea. And for the media, same idea. A lot of them aren't watching other conferences or teams either. But even if they are, what, because of our opinions, it really does shape the narrative and the conversation, and then I believe even how we judge these teams throughout the season. Maybe it was just that the media overrated them and not that they're underachieving. But anyways, I digress. Peyton Manning, we ran through some of the clips on the show yesterday from the large Hall of Fame induction weekend in Canton. And we ran out of time. We did not get to the clip from Peyton Manning, which is fine because I want to devote a little more time on it today anyways. And I think they may have played Peyton's speech on Fan Talk yesterday. But Peyton Manning, of course, you knew he was going to deliver an A-plus speech. In fact, many believe that it was his push to be commissioner one day. That this was him setting that stage of showing like, hey, I am a good guy to lead this sport. And because of a clip like this, maybe you could understand why people would feel that way. But it's an important clip, the clip we're about to play, I think that all athletes should hear. Here was Peyton Manning Sunday night as part of his induction ceremony. This was a snippet of what he had to say.
Now, when we leave this stage tonight, it is no longer about us. It is about cultivating the game that has given so much to us. It's about nurturing football to live and thrive another day, another year, decade, and another generation. It's about guaranteeing that kids everywhere can learn, bond, grow, and have fun with every flag pulled, every tackle made, every pass thrown, every run, block, sack, and touchdown scored. The audience here tonight is made up of diehard fans who feel football deep in your bones. Now, we may have ignited the fire, but you have fanned the flames. Inevitably, those flames will be whipped by the winds of change, but they don't need to smolder. The future of this game is ours to shape. We just need to take tomorrow on our shoulders as readily as we donned our pads before each game. Let this moment become a cherished memory. And then remember, a legacy is only worthwhile when there is a future to fuel. God bless you and God bless football.
That was how Peyton ended his speech Sunday, which overall was a really job well done. And of course, that's what you would expect from Peyton Manning. A lot of times with athletes, right, the greatest athletes are like on and off the field, they're also just the great people that would achieve greatness no matter what they did. Right, like Peyton Manning seems like the type of person that even if he wasn't a football player, he'd be successful. John Lynch went into the Hall of Fame this weekend. He's another one. I mean, he's running a football team now. You have to be pretty intelligent to do that. But he seems like another one that even if he wasn't a great football player, he would be successful somewhere else. I thought he was a good broadcaster. I think he's done a pretty good job as a GM. No matter what he's done, yes, all around football, but he's done it in all three phases, really, outside of being a coach. Player, broadcaster, GM so far, he has succeeded. I think John Lynch would be successful in whatever he did. Right, most of these guys, like Charles Woodson is another one that seems like he would probably be successful no matter what. And I think there's something to that, that these great athletes are just great, like, achievers. But Peyton Manning, with that speech he gave on Sunday, many believed it was him angling to one day be a commissioner of the league. And I think he would do a good job in that if he was ever interested. But why I like that clip the most, or why that stood out and why I wanted to play it, is because I think it's important for all athletes, most notably former professional athletes, to hear. One of my biggest complaints about baseball is how they self-cannibalize themselves. A lot of the current athletes, but also former guys as well. Right, David Ortiz, who just retired within the last 5 years and now works for the sport covering the game, and how critical he is about, oh, the game's not the same, I can't watch it. Gary Sheffield, who covered the game, the playoffs for TBS, didn't play that long ago. Same idea, right? Oh, I don't watch baseball anymore. It's so boring, I can't watch it. Frank Thomas, anybody that covers Major League Baseball, or just former players in general, so critical of the sport. We see it a lot in football as well. Former athletes that played in the NFL, very critical of the league or Roger Goodell or the people in the sport. And as Peyton Manning said, right, it's up to us to shape the future of the game. We can cultivate, for the sport moving forward. There is some bitterness, and understandably so, in certain cases. A guy has an injury, ends his career. The NFL, they don't help him out afterwards. Alters his life. Maybe he's in a wheelchair or whatever, and the NFL's not giving him a... Right, there's certain players that do have a case to be made that should feel bitter towards the league. But anybody that has ever walked on that stage as a Hall of Famer, the amount of money that they made through their career or the opportunities that it presents after their career, right, should only be thanking the league and not putting them down. And this is an issue most notably with baseball, but it happens in all sports, where these former athletes, right, have these great careers, the fortune, the fame. They're able to do what they love, play for a long time. It gives them broadcasting jobs afterwards. It allows them to get into coaching, this and that, speaking engagements, whatever it is. They're good for the rest of time because of that career they had through the NFL and the opportunity provided. And it's not that they should, you know, kiss their feet and bend over backwards and everything, but just understand the opportunity that you did have. And while you can offer some criticism that is beneficial, it's just the tone typically from former athletes is always so negative. And maybe some of it is just like back in my day, right? Kids these days, they don't know how tough they have it. But Peyton Manning has always been very positive about the game of football. His entire speech was as well as Sunday. He wasn't taking shots at anybody. When he talks publicly or to the media, he never does. He always takes the high road. Maybe he's, you know, like a politician that way. But I think for a lot of these guys that built their careers, their fortune, their fame, their second careers off of that sport, I thought it was a good message from Peyton. That, like, we should be grateful for this opportunity, and we should pay it forward and continue to grow this game and help the next generation and be a positive influence instead of always complaining. The amount of complaints and critiques about the sport or these leagues from the former athletes, almost like forgetting where they came from, about the opportunity that was presented to them by these same leagues to live the lives that they live. Some guys, no doubt, have a reason to be bitter or complain or feel like they were wronged over the course of their professional careers. But the vast majority of these former athletes, right, should be thankful for the opportunity and continue to pay it forward by helping to grow the game. And that's what Peyton was doing. Was some of that maybe a little pandering to eventually become some sort of commissioner? If that's of interest to him, maybe. I just don't see Peyton even being interested in that. According to reports, he wasn't interested in being in a front office for a team, not interested in joining the Monday Night Football booth. Would he really be interested in being a commissioner? You go from being one of the most beloved personalities to, no matter what you do, probably being one of the most hated. I think Roger Goodell's the best commissioner in sports, and yet people hate him. They boo him at the draft. Would you really want to go through that? It's like being a president almost, right? Is it really worth all the stress and half the country hating you to become the president? Especially for somebody like a Donald Trump who's already successful in their own right. Right, Peyton, like, is it really worth becoming commissioner and having at least half the football fans hating you, no matter what you do, even if you make the right decision? But if he ever wanted to go that path, Peyton probably would be a pretty good commissioner as well. And I thought that was a good message delivered on Sunday. Coming up, some drama in the horsing game. People are horsing around, pun intended. Insert bad dad joke. We'll wrap up hour one next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Come on, come on, come on and dance with me. Oh, sweet.
wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Some horse drama from the Olympics. There was this story that you may have saw from over the weekend. Just because the Olympics have finished up doesn't mean we're done with any sort of drama that may come from it. But I do know that as they finished up, like, the championship round of pentathlon, whatever it is with the horses. I don't even know what this thing is.
Pentathlon,
that's what it is. I watched some. They're, like, dancing around. I don't know. For part of it, I know there's certain things where the horses have to jump and everything. Anyways, Germany's coach got banned because she punched the horse and also told one of the riders to really hit the horse when the horse refused to jump. Now, this, of course, is not a good look, and I love animals. And today is actually Spoil Your Pet Day or Spoil Your Dog Day, and I'm an animal lover. I don't like this idea of punching horses. Now, people involved in the horsing game will tell you that it's actually fairly common. I mean, if you ever watch a race, right, you got somebody on the back of a horse and they're whipping the thing. So it's not like these horses are treated the best during these events. The horse was, I guess, refusing to jump, and the rider was punching the horse to try to get it to jump. And so the coach, you know, got banned for this. This is a whole big deal now. And it's turned into a controversy where people in the horse game say, like, oh, no, this is something, right? Sometimes we have to hit the horses. And people that aren't involved in this, that just like animals, right, don't like this idea of, what are you punching a horse for? That just seems so off. Now, I ran into somebody not too long ago who, you know, one of those, my cousins, sisters, friends, thing. Right? I met somebody who knew someone who was supposed to participate in the Olympics. I don't know if it was this year or 2016 for, like, equestrian. And something happened with the horse, got injured on the travel over there. They flew the horse, I guess, and something happened. The whole horsing thing is really interesting to me. And this girl had apparently drop out because the horse got injured in travel. But I also know others have said that the riders don't actually pick their horses for the Olympics. And that's another issue, that the horse may not want to do something when they don't know the rider, and then the rider's punching the horse. It's a whole thing. But this is not the only drama to come from the horsing world. There's also an issue involving Bruce Springsteen. We'll have to get to that coming up as well. Hour two next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.